So I hope you're enjoying the last day of Tech Ed. I'm sure everyone's looking forward to the end ceremony at the stadium tonight. I will highly recommend you guys make it. I was there for the WPC event that was here last year in that in one of the stadiums, and it's Mike's always put on a good show there. So you've got that to look forward to after another day of information overload and Kool-Aid drinking from the Microsoft fountain. Today we're going to be talking about setting up your SharePoint on-premises environment for app development. My name is Jeremy Thake, and I'm here with Fabian Williams. What we're going to quick do from an intro perspective is just kind of recommend our blogs. So both of us are pretty crazy bloggers. So I'm at jeremythake.com, and from there you can see all the articles that I write, my Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter pages that I actually post a fair amount of stuff on there around SharePoint, but now with my new role at Microsoft, where I'm looking after the whole Office development platform from a product marketing perspective, you'll see that I'll be kind of expanding into the other areas of the Office world as well. And then Fabian? Yeah.
So I blog at fabiangwilliams.com. Predominantly, you'll see me talking about business connectivity services, workflows, Azure, and as of lately, doing a lot with hybrid, connecting both the on-premises environment to the cloud.
So that's how you can reach us afterwards. We will be around. I'm going to be on the booth straight after this session. There's a Garage Series session where I'll be talking about app development as well. So if you haven't swung by the Office 365 booth, I'd kind of highly recommend you check that out and come speak to some of the other experts from the product group that are there. Okay, so today we're going to be covering a few things, mainly to explain why do we still need on-premises development environments and when it comes to SharePoint development. I'm going to talk a little bit about how you get started as a SharePoint developer in this sense, both from an app development standard, but also from an on-premises development standard as well. And then I'm going to hand over to Fabian, who's going to talk about how you, an IT pro, or if you're a developer with a little IT pro skills, can actually go and set up this server-to-server or
high trust
setup on an on-premises box. And then we'll also explain this alternative as well, which is the OAuth setup, which is to do with Office 365 configuration of that trust. So by the end of the session, you'll have a good understanding about this. There is a lot of content available online, but we just felt that as a team back in Redmond that it was really worthwhile having a session that went through these steps and giving you guys the opportunity to ask these questions, because we do appreciate that sometimes it can be a little bit complicated to get developers to jump into PowerShell and understand all the certs and different bits and pieces that you need to do to configure this. So why on-premises development? You know, you've heard Microsoft pushing a lot about Visual Studio and just having that F5 experience directly from a Windows 8 machine and developing against Office 365. Well, there are still some scenarios where you may need to set up with an on-premises environment. If you're purely in Office 365, you can actually go to this page on the Office Dev Center, which is the link's down there as a short link. Essentially, that setup's very, very easy. I can either have Windows 7 or Windows 8. Make sure you're on the latest version of Visual Studio, 2013, with Update 2. The Update 2, the tools are actually included directly into that Visual Studio update. And essentially, you can just go File, New, Project, select SharePoint App, F5, and you'll be asked to put your Office 365 URL in, and you'll immediately be developing against SharePoint. But in that instance, you know, if you've been in the SharePoint world for a long time, just out of interest, who's here is a SharePoint developer already? Okay, the majority of the room. So if you've been a SharePoint developer for a while and you've been building on full trust code way back all the way to SharePoint 2007, you would have known the heartache of having to set up an on-premises box and, you know, fighting your managers to get laptops that would have 32 gig of RAM on them, to have a virtual machine with AD on it and a virtual machine with all these other bits and pieces. But there are some scenarios still, even in the app model way, where you would need to have an on-premises environment. The main reasons I see and I've compiled for this presentation, you're interfering with the... Oh no.
Yeah, go closer.
No, it's someone's.
However, as Jeremy's taking care of that, let me just jump in and say as well, just to fan that out a little bit more. As a developer, and that is what I do 9 times out of 10 every day, the experience is even better if you take this leap into Azure. For my presentation that I did on Tuesday, which was a hybrid session, I had all of my environment inside the cloud. So stood up an entire farm and then tied that into my Office 365 tenant. For this presentation, in fact, there are several tools out there. I'm actually going to show you what that looks like. Are you ready? Are you back?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to show you what it looks like as soon as I come back up.
Never trust someone to scrub your decks right before your session. So the main reasons I see out there for doing this, the first main one is you guys in a room have probably got existing full trust code that you've deployed to your production environments for either your own internal environments or if you're a contractor and you're working with multiple customers for your customers. So in that sense, if you want to continue building or enhancing those existing full trust code, or if you want to keep me really happy, you're migrating that full trust code over to the app model code, you are going to need an environment where you can actually have that running. And so that's probably the most common scenario we're seeing is that in having a local on-premises SharePoint environment. The other side, and we're seeing this in obviously some government customers and some areas of the world where they aren't allowed to use Office 365 for various reasons. I don't need to go into that in too much detail. But if you can't have Office 365 at all, then you will actually need an on-premises environment. But there is one thing that people kind of, it's a myth, essentially, that you can actually have SharePoint running somewhere in your environment that you can access. As long as you can plug that URL into Visual Studio, SharePoint for app model development doesn't have to be local to your machine. It can just be deployed and shared maybe as an environment for multiple developers within your environment. But you're going to get the most control if each individual developer has its own virtual development environment for them to work within. Because especially if you're setting up provider-hosted apps like Fabian's going to show in a bit, when you're configuring those, there are a few steps you have to do on the SharePoint server. So if you're using a shared SharePoint environment between lots of developers, you're going to have to interact with that environment. And the big danger there is that I could be developing something with my provider-hosted app, and then Fabian comes along and starts trying to add additional client IDs in there, and it might break my app. Or, as you're probably even aware, with full trust code, if I'm trying to do debugging, and I've attached the debugger into that environment, Fabian can't get in there and do any development while I've got the debugger attached. Right. So you really do have to have your own individual virtual environment when you're building with a SharePoint environment like that. The other side of it is, whether it's the Wi-Fi gods at a conference or whether you're just in a location where you don't have internet access, maybe you're a contractor working on a government site, there are lots of other reasons around that kind of offline or low connectivity where you can't rely on, you know, day-to-day sitting there developing against Office 365 as well. So in that instance, it would make sense to have it locally on your box. And in some cases, you know, you might be in an environment where you need to snapshot. So I typically use Hyper-V on my local environments. And that way, if I've installed something and I get in a horrible state with my SharePoint, I can actually roll back those snapshots on my own local environment. There's no concept of rolling back snapshots if I'm in Office 365. It becomes very hard to roll back snapshots, even in a shared development environment that you're working within your team, because I might want a snapshot now and roll it back, but Fabian might be in there as well, right, and he's got changes that he doesn't want to lose. So, you know, you get a lot more flexibility in having your own unique SharePoint environment. And then the other aspect is that, obviously, you may have already noticed that Office 365 is moving at a very fast rate. The release cycle of on-premises has traditionally been 3 years. We've had 2003, 2007, 2010, 2013. And in between those major releases, we've had various cumulative updates every other month. And we've had various service packs every 18 months. And typically, your organization with their on-premises SharePoint might not keep up to date. Just out of interest, in your own organizations, how many of you guys are on Service Pack 1 of 2013? Okay, so that proves my point a little bit. So really, you've got to have a development environment that mimics whatever your customer is using in their production environment. Even if it's out by one CU, you might get different reactions from the APIs or how you've built your customizations than what you would in the previous version. Naturally, if you're still on 2010, or 2007, then you're going to have those replications here. The scope of this session is more around the 2013 aspect, but a lot of these concepts you can take on board from a 2010 and 2007 development environment as well. So hopefully that explains why we're talking about this, even though kind of we're out there saying you don't need to do this anymore. There is this scenario where you do need to still have an on-premises environment. For this next section, there is a really good page on the Office Dev Center as well, and this explains how you do a local dev setup. So this is how you get that on-premises SharePoint going, all of the minimum requirements you need for your machines. But just I'm adding a little bit of personal experience to this before we spin through. So from an operating environment, you do need to be running 64-bit with 2013. The document does say at least 16 gig of RAM, but I don't know what... Yeah. What's your experience of that, Fabian?
With 16, there's no way you're going to get a true experience, and you may even have services that just will not come up or will not be responsive for what you're trying to do. So at the minimum, 24. And that's the reason why, for my development, I actually use Azure, because then I can throttle things up based on just my computes. I typically stick around the A6 with 8 cores, 24 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, and what you'll notice, you'll see your developers smugly go, well, I've set up a virtual machine in my Windows 8 in a Hyper-V, mm-hmm. and it's running on 12 gig of RAM, and they've kind of F5'd in SharePoint, and it looks like SharePoint's running. But in actual fact, if you go and look in the service to see what's running, what SharePoint is actually doing behind the scenes is it's looking at how much resources are free on the server. And if there are, I think it's under 5%, it'll actually start shutting services down. And so if you then start trying to deploy full trust code that talks to any of the APIs, the REST API or the CSOM API, it'll actually reject. It'll just say that those services don't exist.
Right, or even more so. Well, you may get some either 401 or 403 errors, and then you're spending your time trying to debug those things, and
right.
it's not necessarily that's not the root cause.
Yeah, and there are some tricks. You can start turning off certain services like search.
Yeah.
Search is definitely a significant gobbler when it comes to those environments. But if you're building any kind of juicy, kind of chunky business solutions, more than likely, you are going to be using the search APIs. So again, this recommendation of 16, we tend to recommend that you can, you should really be looking at least 24 gig of RAM. So what that means is, unlike me that's carrying around an X1 Carbon, very slimline laptop, you've got people like Fabian here, we're checking his back muscles out with a brick and a bag with wheels to carry his development workshop wherever he goes. So I don't miss those days of having to carry around a hefty bag. So to install SharePoint 2013, what do you need? Well, you need either Windows Server 2008 R2 Service Pack 1. Again, has to be 64-bit. Or you need Windows Server 2012. Now, most of you guys don't want to have as a base installation on your laptop either of those operating systems. There are some guides out there that will tell you how to enable the desktop desktop experience on those operating systems. But there's certain things that you just won't be able to install on those operating systems because consumer programs just aren't tested against server operating systems. So yes, you could install this on the base of your laptop and then install SharePoint on there. But you're going to lose out a lot from that perspective. So what we recommend is you actually use a hypervisor of your choice. And again, if you're using Windows 8 as your base operating system on your laptop or your workstation, you can enable Hyper-V and run SharePoint in virtual machines in those hypervised environments. So the options you've got, in essence, is having one virtual machine, as I call it kind of the all-up machine. You're typically going to need Active Directory installed and DNS running on that server, as well as SQL and SharePoint. The reason I say AD and DNS, especially so now with the app model where you do need to do some things that Fabian will show later on around URLs, if you're relying on your corporate AD, typically there's not many organizations out there that will have a test or a development AD. So you're going to need to ask permission to be able to run your server in a virtual machine and then ask your IT guy to allow you to join the production AD domain. And again, most IT guys are not going to be too keen on that. So you do really need to run your own isolated Active Directory environment. Now, for me as a dev, having an all-up VM is very, very, very simple. If you go into the scenario where you try and break your roles into different virtual machines, so you have a VM for your Active Directory and your DNS, a VM for your SQL, and a VM for your SharePoint maybe, the problem you're going to get is that if you're not a networky guy, when it comes to setting up the NICs in Hyper-V or VMware or whatever else you're using, or if, as Fabian's going to show, in Azure, it's something that, from an expertise style as a dev, typically it's not not in your strong suit. So the all-in is going to get away from the complexities of having that split of VMs. It also means, especially now with the app model, you're going to need internet access on that SharePoint server. So having virtual machines that have got both a local network, if you're split VMs, as well as an external network where you get the internet, especially if you're moving around, like if you're coming to a conference and you have to connect to a Wi-Fi and then you go home and connect to another network, there's a little bit of NIC fiddling you have to do to get that to work every environment you jump your machine into. Whereas if you have an all-in environment, it's a lot easier to configure with that. So that's just my own personal experience with it. But if you've got that experience with networking and you understand how to configure Hyper-V like that, then good on you. You will get significant benefits from splitting your virtual machines out. SQL will just eat everything it can, memory-wise and CPU-wise and disk-wise. By splitting out your virtual machines, what you'll actually be able to do is, the scenario that I did, and are you running two hard drives in that one?
Yeah.
So if you have two hard drives, or ideally SSDs, you can put one virtual machine on one drive and one virtual machine on the other. So typically, you know, AD is not going to really hurt you, but if you separate your SQL and your SharePoint onto different SSDs and have those running in different virtual machines, you'll actually get a significant performance increase if you do that. So that's one little tip that you'll find. But again, this starts costing a little bit more money when you start speccing out a machine with that much hardware in it.
Actually, can we do another poll? We did poll earlier, and we did realize that we have a lot of devs in here. How many devs in here have MSDN accounts? As expected. So you do have Azure benefits.
Yeah, right. Most definitely. Yeah. So this virtual machines versus physical, essentially that's really talking about you being on your local machine. But as Fabian's going to demo in a minute, you know, the Azure benefits that you have, just be careful that you do put your switch it so the cap comes into play. So you don't get the big hefty bill at the end of the month when you've left the machine on by accident when you thought you'd shut it down. Done that a few times and saw my credit card bill. There is a setting you need to put on to tell it to stop once you get past the credits you get as an MSN subscriber. So that's one lesson learned. So what do you need on these machines? Well, once you've got that baseline Windows server installed and you've got SQL installed on there, again, you know, you guys have probably been all through this process. We're getting the prerequisites that done. Once you've installed that, one trick you might not know is that that link's in white as well. Is that there is a project where someone has put together a script. It's not hidden on purpose, I promise you. Someone has put together a script which allows you to download off your Windows 8 machine or a machine with internet access, download all the prerequisites for SharePoint, and then grab all those downloaded files, drop them into your VM and just run a PowerShell script so you can actually install your prereqs offline. So if you don't have internet access within your VMs, this is a really, really useful script. You might go, well, all my VMs have it. It actually can be quicker because if you've got all those downloads available, if you're building a lot of VMs, this is a really cool tool to repeat building out SharePoint environments as well. So just a little tip there. And the concept you're going to see with the applications. And this makes sense either if you're on-premises with a local VM, whether you're in Azure with a VM, or whether you're in Office 365. When you're working as a developer and you've got that F5 experience with your SharePoint apps, you want to make sure that whatever URL you put into Visual Studio, into the properties, is a developer site collection. The developer site collection template is actually a special template that allows you to deploy apps and it enables Visual Studio to talk to that site collection in a way that if you were trying to F5 into a normal team site or a blank site, you actually wouldn't get the same experience in your developer.
What do you get? side loading of apps are not permittable
in this template. And then you bing it, and then it either goes to someone's blog where they explain you've used the wrong site template.
But look, unfortunately, there are PowerShell scripts to allow you to do that, to activate a hidden feature to make that happen. But realistically, for all the benefits, you want to make sure you choose the developer site when you're coming up.
Yeah, there is a feature you can enable on an existing site collection, mm-hmm. but we don't really recommend that you, especially because it kind of encourages you to F5 into a production environment, into a team site. We really want to try and isolate you from a development perspective into this developer site collection template. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in Office 365, or maybe in a shared environment, a shared virtual environment, and you've got maybe 10 developers who are developing against one SharePoint environment, what we actually recommend is you create an individual site collection for each one of your developers. Because with the app model, essentially, you'll see a lot of demos where you'll see jeremy.sharepoint.com, WAC, sites, WAC, dev. What you can do is you can actually have WAC dev 1, WAC dev 2, WAC dev 3, and just associate a developer with each one of those site collections. Because the app model is kind of scoped at that site collection level, we can all be F5ing like crazy into those different site collections, and we're good to go. If you're in a full trust world like you are now, as I mentioned before, if you pointed 4 developers at one SharePoint farm, you're not going to be able to do that. Because as soon as I go into development mode, I'm attached to the process inside SharePoint, which means no one else can touch that environment. So the app model has brought a lot of benefits to the development experience that you didn't get with full trust code. The minimum that you need from an app model perspective to get running, you do have to have the user profile service going. And you do need to make sure that it has crawled in an account, and the account has to have an email address. You'll get some very funky errors if you have a user profile crawled without the email address. I'll let Fabian explain that when I hand it over to him for the demos. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that Fabian will show you how to do is you will need the app management service installed in that environment as well. But that's the bare minimum that you need to be running on SharePoint to be able to do app development inside your SharePoint VMs. Now, if you haven't got Visual Studio 2013, and the majority of you guys put your hands up, so you should be on Visual Studio 2013. But if you're on Visual Studio 2012, the tools are still available at that link there. So you can download those tools for Visual Studio 2012. I will say the amount of productivity enhancements that you get in Visual Studio 2013 really outweigh the cost of what it is to do that upgrade between the two dev toolings. So please, try and talk to your manager to push to get that latest tooling in there. And you'll see there's a lot of things that we've got coming out that from other platform teams that will only be deployable into 2013 in Visual Studio. So at some point, when you start leveraging the app model and you start leveraging kind of the Azure web roles and stuff, those Azure SDKs, as they're improving, you're going to really need the latest and greatest Visual Studio to do that. Now, before I hand it over to Fabian, there's one other thing I wanted to cover with the app model. And apologies if you've been to a few app sessions today and you've seen a little bit about this URL concept. Essentially, what we see here, and I'm just going to change this because someone's changed my theme completely and not checked the slides. Essentially, what you see here is that there's this coding that you have to kind of be able to read as a SharePoint developer in the app model world. When you do an F5 experience with a SharePoint-hosted app, what you're actually going to get is this prefix that you define when you configure your farm, which Fabian will show in a moment. And then you'll get a unique ID for your SharePoint app when you do that deployment. And then it will just be the normal SharePoint URL or wherever you decide to host your app domain. Now, what we see with a lot of customers is they're not sure what to call that domain. So if your SharePoint server is intranet.jeremy.com, where should all my apps run on? Now, the key here is that the apps can't run on the same URL as the SharePoint URL. So you can't have my app URL as, intranet.jeremy.com, and then just to have the apps running off that as a subsite. It has to have its own unique main domain. So that's why you have this app prefix, which typically we recommend is app. Then you have the dash, and then you have that GUID, and then it's .intranet.jeremy.com. The main reason for that is that we have this isolation then, and so that my app, when it's deployed, essentially the browser's going to stop me from doing certain things inside my intranet.jeremy.com because of the cross-domain blocks that the browser does. And that's a security thing that the SharePoint engineering team put into play to make sure that you can't do that cross-site scription. So it's actually there on purpose. So what we do recommend is that when you do this, you try and keep with the standards so that when other developers come in, they understand this. And when Fabian shows about setting up the wildcards later on, my main guidance here when setting this up is try and be consistent across all of your development environments. So have a standard of what you want to do. So if your app prefix is going to be app, make sure all of your developers, when they set up their farms, have the same app prefix. So have that consistent across all of your development environments. The other thing I'd recommend is have a standard for if your SharePoint URL is intranet.jeremy.com, then have your app URL as maybe app.intranet.jeremy.com. But again, have that consistency in that main wildcard when you set it up. I've seen a lot of customers get into trouble, and this will make more sense when Fabian runs through the PowerShell scripts, but I've seen a lot of customers get into trouble where they don't have that standard, and people will do all sorts of things. Like they'll follow the Technic article, which recommends contosoapps.com for the app URL, right, but the SharePoint site might be on intranet.jeremy.com. It's better to keep those similar so that you've got that standard across your different environments. But again, once Fabian gets into demos, that will make a lot more sense. And the other last little trick that you'll get with these development environments, and we've always had this loopback adapter issue when it comes to development, whether it was full trust code or app model code. Mm-hmm. But it is recommended that you configure the loopback adapter check, and there's an article there that you can go and run through to configure that in your farm. There's various ways you can do it. It's a registry key, or you can do it through PowerShell. But what this does is when I click on a SharePoint app, if you get an auth prompt box, that means you haven't followed these instructions. If you do an F5 and it just runs into the SharePoint app without an auth prompt box, that means you've already configured the loopback. So I've had this question a lot this week, so that's why I put this slide in. You really need to make sure you've done this loopback adapter check and switched it so that it doesn't give you that auth prompt anymore. And then the other bit of guidance here, and Fabian, you don't show this.
I have this too.
Is that there is an option to actually use a PowerShell flag that means you don't have to use SSL in your local development environment. So you can actually just run this script, which means you can run in HTTP when you're doing app model development. My main guidance, and you'll hear this from a lot of people out in the field that have been doing app model development since the beta days, is develop in as close an environment configuration as you can to your production environments.
Right.
So in the case of Office 365, everything is SSL'd. In the case of on-premises, hopefully your IT guys have got everything SSL'd. If you dev with just HTTP, you may have problems that you didn't experience in your dev environment when you try and set those up in your test, pre-prod, production environments. It is a little bit more of a step, and Fabian will show that in a moment, but I would highly recommend that you create those local certificates rather than skipping the create the local certificates and turn that SSL off. So just because you can doesn't mean you should, essentially what the guidance is I'm giving you there. So with that, I'll hand the baton over to Fabian. Fabian's going to talk first about the server-to-server or the high trust setup.
I'm going to change it a little bit, actually, but since you already did so much prep work and talk in terms of talking about the app domain, I'm going to start there and then work my way into that.
Too easy. So go crazy.
Jump.
Yeah.
So again, good handoff, Jeremy. What I'll be doing, just to set the stage, is I'm going to be showing you one of a few experiences, at least my experience, in terms of creating a development environment for on-premises with SharePoint 2013. As you can, one of the things Jeremy talks about as well here is a key example. I actually have $150 in credit. And in coming here this week, I started off back on, May 1st? By May 7th, I was already at $42. By the time I got here, I was at $2. So now I'm on my credit card. So I'm gonna get that hefty bill. However, the environment I'm gonna show you here is gonna be built in the Azure environment. But obviously, as Jeremy was talking about before, this can be on your own bare metal, where you're gonna have your AD stood up inside your Hyper-V, and you may have your all-in-one inclusive SharePoint box, or you may have a SharePoint farm. So what I'm gonna start off here is I'm gonna start off with the actual Active Directory box, because one of the experiences that you can have here, even within Azure, is a template that's provided that allows you to spin up a developer environment. Almost vanilla, you need to run a PowerShell script right after that, but it assumes that you're joined to a domain. So let's take a look first at the domain and talk about that experience, and then we'll jump across. So when you're working with app development, especially, well, at least for me, when I'm doing app development, at times I'm doing things in a hybrid fashion. Your domain name becomes a play into it, so that's the reason why you will see something here called fabiansworld.com. But the key takeaway here is that is your default zone that is created whenever you do Active Directory. In order to facilitate the app isolation, what you'll see in terms of the guidance out there is to create a new forward lookup zone. And in my example here, I actually have two farms. I had one for my hybrid session. I have one here for this session as well. So after you create a forward lookup zone, it's just a matter of just creating a CNAME record. And inside your CNAME record, all you're basically doing is, as Jeremy mentioned before, where I have ZZZ, you would have app. And the asterisk just denotes where that new, each application you create will have that GUID in front of it, and then follow it through. And all this points to now is the web front end of my SharePoint box, so it can know, you know, how to tie in the app domain into the SharePoint experience. But once you have done this, in essence, that's it for Active Directory. Anything else you want to jump in on? That's it?
Yeah, I think from that perspective, one thing to take into account is that if you're sharing an Active Directory environment with a bunch of different people, you're going to have that issue where you're going to have to ask your AD guy to set those up in the first place.
Indeed.
So having your own AD and own DNS to be able to do this yourself, rather than having to go to bribe the IT pro with a bunch of stuff, is whether it's Coke or lollies or Red Bull or whatever their choice of bribery
Jolt.
Is. Jolt.
Jolt.
Then you know you're better off having your own DNS server so you can just go in here and play with this yourself.
Right.
But I would highly recommend that, again, try and keep this consistent across each of your environments.
Okay. What I'm going to do now, I don't want to like bury my face down here and type while I'm talking. I have a video here that's running, and what this video is showing you is an experience, and I want to actually pause a couple places as well and talk through it. I'll just stop right here and pause at this point. So, again, I'm using Azure, and as I did poll the audience, you guys all have Azure benefits. If you're not using it to do this, you should definitely try it out. It's not going to take a lot from you. If you do not have these MSDN subscriptions, you can certainly sign up for free trials and try this out as well. However, out of the box, and as Jeremy mentioned before, you want to be in Visual Studio 2013 with Update 2 because it has all of those toolings already there for you. There's a template that Microsoft provides that once you click on it, it runs you all the way through and it provisions this box for you. Now, obviously, when Jeremy mentioned before that as a developer, unless you have those skill sets of an IT pro, knowing how to provision networks and so on and so forth, there may be a little bit of a learning curve there, but there's so much guidance out there, and Azure provides you such a beautiful template. It steps you right through on each tab. So I'm actually waiting for this to go to the next slide. I'm going to pause.
So I have to ask, why does it say box blew up, plan B, Fabian?
All right, we'll talk about that as soon as I press this pause key right here. Which goes to, it's a great question. Because as Jeremy was sleeping last night, all tucked in, there is an issue, the 401 issue that you saw earlier there today. I experienced that because I'm using a wildcard certificate that I used for my hybrid session, trying to use it here. And there's some guidances. There's a blog out there from Steve Peschka. There's another MVP here named Eric Shubbs that noted that there are some issues when you use wildcard cert. This one needs actually SAN certs to work properly. Otherwise, you may meet into some issues. So I had everything running up until the time I saw him last night at 4 p.m. We demoed it. We went through a deck. I went back home to my hotel at 11:30. I said, you know, Jeremy was saying, you really should get that thing working. So I got, you know, tried it, saw Peshka's blog, said, okay, let me try this. What could go wrong? So what could go wrong is my entire farm just went, you know, downhill in a hurry. So I basically spun this guy back up again, and by 7 o'clock this morning, when you saw me, right?
Yeah.
7 o'clock this morning, I was back up and running in a position to do a demo here today. The one thing I will say is that I was awake up until 5:30, though, so I'm only working on 2 hours of sleep. But the story here is that whether it's catastrophic failure, whether you need to work with a customer and bring something up to show them what's available, or if you need to mimic an environment, and this is why I'm paused on the screen. As I mentioned before, the guidance out there is pretty simple. What you're looking at here in my environment is I basically set up a Active Directory, a DNS server out there in Azure. I have an AD box that's tied to that. I then created a network with a VLANs, and that's very easy to ask you, what IP addresses do you want to use for your internal? How big do you want to make your subnet? And then it also asks you, where do you want to create your storage? Because each one of these VM actually is a cloud storage that follows it. So once you provide that in there, Microsoft basically just says, okay, you know, tell me where you want to go. So I'm using my Visual Studio MSDN subscription here. I am choosing my network here. And then I have my subnet below. And once I choose my subnet, then it's just a matter of telling it where the storage is and then clicking go. And once you click go, the next thing that you actually have, it takes a few minutes. A few minutes is generous. It may take like around 15 or so minutes. And it's, you know, it moves from this start in here provisioning to a fully running machine. Once you've done that, in essence, what you get is this box here. What does this box say? This box name is Fabian Needs Sleep, because this is now around maybe, 2:30 in the morning. but you'll see here on the desktop what Microsoft gives you. There's a few web pages that gives you very good guidance in terms of how to move through this experience. And there are two folders as well. And I'm just, you know, walking my way through this to actually get to the PowerShell piece of this. But inside the configure development, under scripts, you have the ability to create a standalone farm without AD, a farm with AD. And if you're doing app development, you're going to want that AD, because you're going to need to have that the app isolation in there. Or this could just be a generic SQL Server BI box. Popping this open here, the next step that you'd go through. As Jeremy mentioned before, when the box comes to you, it comes to you very, very basic. I have a video on that. In fact, I'm just going to talk through this and then show you the video. The PowerShell scripts are quite easy, and I would highly encourage that you do PowerShell, following up on what Jeremy said in terms of just having multiple developers. If you're not your own shop, if you have a team of people working, you want that consistency. So person A can just go to person B and see and experience the exact same thing. So PowerShell out your stuff. So this one here basically is just, you know, getting my my application pool so that I can move over here and start to create the minimal service that are required. Now, I think in Jeremy's slide, it did say that you need to have user profile services. You need to have the application management services. There's one more as well. There is the synchronization subscription service that you need as well. Or at least I put it in there. The guidance says to do it. I've done it. But I know for the app piece of it, this is required. So the PowerShell script is quite easy, giving it the instance name, the database name, and provisioning the service application. Once I'm done that, I start off in my subscription services, and in the end, what you have is an environment that have these service applications running. At a minimum, you need to have this going. So you need to have the user profile services running, as Jeremy mentioned before, with a crawl already done, because you need that UPN off that user. And the error you actually would get is you'll get a permission denied if you try to run and that guy is not already been crawled. So let's go ahead and take a look now actually at the video, and I'll talk through it as we go. It's relatively easy.
And thankfully, the user profile service isn't as unstable as it was in 2010.
Indeed.
For anyone out there that's got the stuck on starting when you've installed this thing.
Reaching the app. Okay. So in this video here, what we have here is, and let me find, let me pause and set the stage for this. So when you're creating these high trust apps, there's a couple different ways. You could be doing this via certificate, or you could be going directly after ACS. And in this example that you're going to see here, I am creating a self-signing certificate that I'm going to be using inside IIS, and that certificate is what is going to be used as my trusted authority inside SharePoint. So what I'm doing here is creating that self-signed cert. I will export that cert as a PFX with the key included, and as a CER to be put up there. You know, you could be pressing this. You know.
You want me to be the
The Vanna White. Okay. Is it going? No. Is it going? Yeah. So right here, I'm calling it High Trust Cert Demo or Demo Cert. It is going to be inside the personal container inside MMC. And right here now, I'm doing the export first, which gives me my PFX file. Here, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a strong key as you're developing, but when you go to production and you have your real certificate from a trusted authority, then you're going to have a strong key. One of the things as it goes through here that I'd like to also call out is that if you're doing your development and you're using a signed certificate, your own self-signed certificate, to move from that to a production environment where you have a trusted certificate is relatively easy. All you need to do is go back into your web.config or your app manifest, depending on whether you're doing how you have it set up, and change the thumbprint, the ID, and the password. So here we're exporting the .cer file, which we'll use shortly in a PowerShell script to create the security author.
And just to point that out, and you'll see this when Fabian goes through the web.config, let me just pause that there, is that if you are using a self-signed cert rather than something maybe IT have provided that is already being used in other environments, it is one less step you have to do when you deploy the provider-hosted part into a different test or a production environment. Right. So if you can get that cert to use in your own development environment, it is definitely one less thing you have to do when you deploy to your different production environments. And you'll see that when Fabian sets up the web config in a moment.
Okay. So let's see how far I go down this. Okay, all right. So here what you'll see me do, this script that we're looking at here actually is the script that will run for setting up that cert. So you'll see me here now, refactoring my script to show the new certificate that I have. I think I actually made a typo here, but as this was early in the morning, you'll see it actually error out, and then I go back in and fix it. Because as I was doing an SSL cert one, and that's what gave me the 401. This 111 that you see in the issuer ID, this just has to be unique. So you'll see me do 111s for this GUID and then 222s in the next one. And I'm just setting this up in order to run it later on, and we'll talk about that over HTTP next. So this should break, and then I should come in and fix it. Or did it? Oh, I guess I edited it out. All right. So this right here, I am now taking the certificate. Oh, there it is. It did break. There it is. And I'm finding the correct one, the .cer file.
I guess that's a good example, and I've done this before, where you don't know, can I run this script again if it's broken, or do I have to roll back my virtual machines? Yeah. The benefit here is that you can actually go through and rerun that again. So yes. Fabian's mistake was a good example of the fact that these scripts aren't totally going to leave you in the dark if you're halfway through.
Indeed. So as we're going through the script here, we're now the next step is going to be creating the token issuer. So this is now where the certificate that we've used before, the realm and the ID that we've created, now creates the security token issuer. The IIS reset is extremely important here. I can't emphasize that enough, because if you do not do IIS reset and go beyond the next step, there's a potential. It's not written in stone. It may take up to 24 hours for your environment to understand. Could you kill my Outlook, please? I'm so sorry, guys. It is midday Eastern time. Could you pause it first and then do it? Thank you. Thank you very much. So As Jeremy mentioned before, this one line of script here that was zoomed out, but thank you.
Happy birthday, Gina. Happy birthday, Pablo.
Yeah. So in here, because I have a self-signed certificate and I'm running over HTTP, I have the flag set to true. It's quite simple. You just run this three lines of code again and set it to false, and then you're all set for your SSL. But you will have to go inside your actual application and make your changes inside the Webler config as well. Okay. Thank you. All right. And I'm going to press F5 here. You'll actually see what comes from those PowerShell scripts being created. We should see a, let me move it faster.
He's really looking for sympathy as well with his URLs, like Fabian needs sleep as well.
Well, I was very angry at you at the time. And I knew you probably could be aware. There it is right there. So when you're done, this, you get a trusted service consumer based on the certificate that you have inside your that you're basically using that PowerShell script. So now you're basically ready to create your own application at this point in time. So let me escape out of this. And let's see.
So out of interest, how many people have run through this themselves already? Just to show hands in on-premise with apps. Okay. 10 people.
All right. So what I'm actually going to do now, which is a little bit risque, I'm actually going to open up, and this was the error that I actually received that caused me the entire grief of redoing a box. But let's go ahead and create from start a, I'm going to have one here that's already working, but let's go ahead and create from start a new application, and we'll talk about it. So we're on this administrator, and while that's coming up, I wanted to show you where the certs are located. So these are all of the certs. This is the self-signed cert, and it's there in two formats. It's there in the PFX and the .cer, CR having the key. So once this comes up here, simply apps, app for SharePoint, demo, live, two, and we click OK. Should go pretty fast. There we go. You're going to target the environment that you want to debug here and select provide a hosted app. Depending on how you want, what flavor you could be doing is MVC or forms. But here is where you need to make that distinction again. So you'll notice also, and when we open up the token helper class, that the one class will work for both the ACS, the Azure Access Control Service, and also the certificate. What you need to do is to go inside your app manifest or your web config, depending on what you're doing, and give it either the proper client ID or give it a certificate name with a password. But there's nothing else that you need to do from a developer perspective. So I'm going to go here and choose certificate. It's already here in certs. I'm just going to go show you where it is here. There it is right there, and cancel back out. Because I've already done this once before, is why it has that issuer ID inside there.
And actually, while he's typing the password, another thing to bear in mind is this setup, this additional setup with the certificates and that PowerShell, or some of that PowerShell, is only required if you're doing provider-hosted apps. So the main reason we're configuring either this S2S high trust setup or the OAuth setup is because SharePoint is going to be running here. Now, I can deploy a SharePoint-hosted app into that SharePoint environment, no problems. It doesn't require that trust because it's running inside SharePoint. But because when Fabian went in the new project, he selected provider-hosted instead, the provider-hosted apps are a little bit different. What I can actually do with a provider-hosted app is, as well as having an app web within my SharePoint site and deploy files into there, much like you would do a sandbox solution, I can also have a provider-hosted aspect of that app. And that can be Azure by default with Visual Studio, or it can be running in an IIS web role. But there's nothing stopping you with provider-hosted from running something in Ruby or PHP or any other web application platform of your choice. So in my session yesterday, I was demoing an Angular JS equivalent where that provider-hosted could have been running in an Apache server. So what we're showing today is configuring the IIS aspect of provider-hosted, but you could also use these certificates and configure this with an Apache server or a PHP or Ruby server as well. So this high trust setup or the OAuth setup is required for provider hosted only. It's not required if you stick to just SharePoint hosted.
Right. Thanks, Jerome. So while Jeremy was talking, we already saw that we were creating a provider-hosted app, a high-trust app using certificates. I had another one spun up here as well using ACS, so we can take a look at the differences between the web.config files and what's needed. So right off the bat, let's just start off with the certificates. As a part of the provisioning process, you're telling it where the certificate is located. You're telling it also the key information, and the web config is already created for you, and it gives you a default page that you can customize and start to use. You also get the token helper class down here as well. Oops, sorry, that's the other project. Demo 2. Get the token helper class. It's still there in the other projects as well. Just want to keep it consistent. And you also get a app manifest file, which I should have done in code view. View code. Yes. And as you go through from development to production, here's where you'll be the only place that you'll be making your changes. I actually do have a live one working here, so I'm going to just use that one so we can see what that experience is. So here in this example, we have a provider-hosted app. We get a default.aspx page. And all I'm doing here is making a call out to a site and pulling back information about the web, information about the user, information about all the lists. And it is using the token helper class to do that, along with the trusted nature of the certificate. So all we have here is just a container to hold the information as it's coming back, a couple lists, a couple labels. In fact, let's just look at it first, and then we'll just talk through it. I click start here. This better work.
And while that's spinning up, one thing to bear in mind is if you're using a previous version of the Office tools, so if you haven't got the latest updates, there was another update of the Office tools that came out on Monday
yeah.
with the Cordova support, which was announced as part of the Visual Studio project types. The SharePoint context class and the token helper class have actually been iteratively improved. So if you were on a previous version of the Office tools, there'll be certain things in the helper class that weren't there that you had to kind of roll your own. Whereas now, if you look, there's direct support for the S2S implementation, the high trust implementation of provider hosted, or the ACS, the OAuth implementation right out of the box. So if you've got a previous project that you'd created with the tools prior to updating the tools, my recommendation would be to go and grab those helper classes out of a new project and move them back into your old project so you can leverage those new classes.
Thanks, Jeremy. So as you can see here, we have the project up and running, and all it's doing is just returning information about the site. Let's just go ahead and take a look and step through that code and look at the token helper class as well. So all the magic happens in the default.aspx.cs. And by default, it does give you a few stubs to help you out.
Now, I'm blind, so you're going to need to zoom
in.
I didn't realize
I had a 150 in that one. Here we go. All right. So in the page load method, what we're doing is just making a call out to the context and returning information back about the web. And we do F12 to that.
So this is the new class. So you might be familiar with the token helper, but this is the new one that handles both S2S and ACS without you actually having to change any code. So definitely make sure you've upgraded your Office tooling, which is available at dev.office.com. Or again, if you've got Visual Studio 2013 Update 2, it's actually built into that update.
So so as you can see here, within the class itself, it does support for high trust, and it does support for ACS. That's the one thing we wanted to call out as well. What else did I have to show? And how to create the app, spin on the wall. Box, the app only, UPA. So user profile services. Something that actually that I noticed when I spun my environment up, my user profile services didn't have the mail attribute correctly set. It was set to proxy class. So is there something that you need to check? I don't know if it's just me, it just hates me, but you have to have, as I mentioned before, a UPN where the work email address is set, otherwise this will not work. I am in the wrong video. Okay, back up, ACS, okay.
So actually, before you do the demo of the HITRUST, I wanted to flip back to slides quickly.
Okay.
So the HITRUST setup, as we've mentioned before, is, again, it's available there. So you can go to the MSDN content. And again, these slides will be available afterwards. That's the instructions of what Fabian has just shown with the PowerShell. Now, my recommendation with these PowerShell scripts is copy and paste into a notepad before you paste into any other kind of PowerShell IDE. Because sometimes, depending on what browser you're viewing the MSDNR calls in, you'll get special characters that kind of muck with the PowerShell. So I always tend to grab those into Notepad, and Notepad strips out any kind of Jujo that's on the page, depending on what your browser's doing. So please, you know, walk through those steps. The main reasons that I would recommend using HITRUST, or you'll see it as S2S, so for the Exchange guys in the room, server to server is the other kind of, it's the same thing, essentially. It is the most common way to do provider-hosted apps for an on-premises environment because you don't need anything more than just a few certificates and some PowerShell code to get this running. And then obviously when you create your Visual Studio projects, you just map to those certificates and map the client secret and ID in there as well. But with the OAuth setup, or you'll often hear it called ACS, the Azure Control Services setup, there's instructions on this URL. I'll update the slides with the correct URL later on. And in the OAuth trust setup, or ACS, it is the most common for hybrid environments. And what I mean by a hybrid environment is if you're using Office 365, maybe if you're using some stuff in SharePoint Online for no customizations or maybe minimal customizations, and then you have an on-premises SharePoint 2013 farm where you're doing heavy customizations, whether it's full trust code or whether it's app model code, we see this hybrid environment as being quite a common one. The benefit of if you've already got Office 365 is that you should really be using that ACS setup, because the reason is if you've set up this ACS setup, which Fabian's going to show in a moment, you don't need to do the certificates in that sense like you did with the full trust in the web config. The ACS setup is actually a lot cleaner inside Visual Studio. And what it does is it future-proofs you that if those apps that you've deployed to your SharePoint 2013 on-premises farm, eventually you decide, I'm actually going to move those to Office 365 SharePoint Online, I don't have to make any changes to my Visual Studio projects at all. Now, you know, I've been in environments where people have 150 farm solutions. So in a year's time or 2 years' time when your company decides to move to Office 365, depending on your decision process you're going through, if you do this now, you'll be ready without having to make any changes to any of your projects. So this leverages the same OAuth mode that if you are running an app inside Office 365 does. The difference is to the HITRUST, where HITRUST is essentially saying, okay, my app's got this certificate and SharePoint knows about the certificate, so when the app launches, SharePoint trusts that provider-hosted part. In the ACS OAuth world, essentially, when you launch the app gives it a client ID and a secret, and it goes to Azure Control Services to check whether that trust is valid or not, and tell SharePoint, yep, you're good to trust this app. So it's just using the cloud, again, I guess, validation process rather than an on-premises where it can't reach out to ACS. So this is going to give you the exact same experience you get with Office 365. So if you have got if you are using SharePoint Online or Office 365 right now, I'd highly recommend you to do ACS over full trust. We realize there is some naming, different people use OAuth, people use ACS, and High Trust and S2S. But essentially, yeah, you've got those two options, and if you're already in Office 365, this approach is definitely the one to take. Right. So we switch back over to three.
And just to follow up on Jeremy, his exact scenario that he provided before is exactly what you're going to see here. I leveraged the fact that I was doing a hybrid environment session earlier on, which means I had a requirement to have ACS there so that we can have that trust between the on-premises and the cloud environment. So I basically leveraged that and used my, this is where my certificate came in now, where I already had a wildcard cert that I could use as my certificate for my provider hosted application. So what we're doing here is we have a new farm. This is a standalone box that I threw up, so I needed to establish that trust and that relationship again with this farm. So you open a PowerShell. There's some, as Jeremy mentioned before, there's a page there with some excellent guidance on that. So I'm doing just some cutting and pasting from actually some scripts I have in that's written, that's publicly available on my blog, and running them through. So we'll just talk through it as it goes. So right now it's just warning me as I'm making a connection to go to the cloud and register my publicly available name, which is also tied to the UPNs of my user. So the public domain name is fabiansworld.com. All my users that are already inside user profile services are username.fabian.com. So these are all of the things that you need to set up first to be able to communicate and speak back to Office 365 SharePoint Online to register that process. So. This is way early in the morning. I apologize for the sloppiness in terms of the typing. But I'm just saying yes to all for all of these. Soon it's going to ask me for my credentials, which will allow me then to do some, do the real work that's required.
And those credentials are your Office 365 credentials?
Those credentials, yeah, those are my domain, my tenant admin Office 365 account, which you will need to be. So here's the get credentials. So now I'm going to make the connection. Paste. All this time I keep forgetting that I can actually right click and paste. All right. And we're going to step through. I'm going to run these scripts iteratively. These could all be batched, except for the credential step, obviously. But I ran it iteratively so we can actually see the outputs. So now what we're doing is setting the variables to replace the certificate. The ID that you see there is the known ID, the GOID for SharePoint Online Office 365. Now we're actually going to do the replacement of the cert. And there's a typo here. Actually, no, there wasn't a typo. The new object, I didn't have the... It's making a call for the new object. It's making a call to the PFX that I did earlier that I didn't have inside this window. So eventually what I will do is go over and grab those variable names and resolve it.
So one bit of advice here with this PowerShell and seeing the errors like this that Faber's had, it's exactly the same stuff I did when I used to do these scripts as well, mm-hmm. is by doing chunks of it, so copying and pasting bits of that script rather than just grabbing the whole lot and running it, it makes it very easy to work out where your script's wrong. If you kind of copy and paste the entire PowerShell script in that you've grabbed from MSDN and drag into PowerShell, you're going to come into errors where you're not sure where the script's got to. Mm-hmm. So doing it in little steps may take a little bit more time, right. but it means that you're going to catch the errors at that one point and not run any code that you shouldn't really be running afterwards.
Right. So here is where I go back across and grab the earlier script that I ran, but from a different window, and close it out. So now I have the patch set, and I'm going to rerun the same. I did press play, right? Yeah. We're going to rerun the same step again. Just move in. Speed it up a little bit. There we go. So this time it ran without any issues. The next step is to set the SPN, the service principal name, for the public name that I have, tying it back to the Microsoft Online so that now we will have both the known name of the Office 365 GUID along with mine. And what name is here? It already exists because I had my hybrid. So because I have my hybrid environment and I'm going back to the same tenant, it already exists. I didn't need to run that. So this is me here trying to remember to tell myself later on inside my demo that it is because I already have this set up for my hybrid environment. Just fast forward through this. All right. So here you can see now there's a fabiansworld.com. Fabiansworld.com, and then there is a ask.sharepoint.com, allowing now both my farm on my on-premises now to use ACS to communicate up into SharePoint Online. And now I'm actually setting up the telling the SharePoint Online app principal about my environment, and in the end we should have two GUIDs that should be the exact same querying both worlds. And that's what we're going to see when we look at the context ID and the PowerShell script for the get app principal. This part, I should have made my buffer a lot bigger, but I did not. Okay, so we're almost at the end. I think there's just two more PowerShell script to run. And once you've done this, as I mentioned before, let's talk ahead of it, is that once this is now done, the only thing you have to do now is go back into your web.config file and go back into your app manifest and change out the certificates, or in this case, using ACS, those users that have the UPN that are crawled inside user profile services are now able to authenticate. And what we should see there is that this and that will, the first one is the context ID of the on-prem. This one is, and both those GUIDs are the same. So. And then that's it.
So you can see that the PowerShell involved to do either the S2S setup or the ACS setup are actually pretty straightforward. The MSDN articles have definitely been improved recently. So
before you jump.
Okay. Because if you've used them in the past, maybe in the betas, there was a lot of feedback on those scripts. So we have taken that feedback on board. So please, make sure if you felt a little bit like, it was horrible last time I tried it, we hope we've kind of shown you that those scripts now are a lot more easy to troubleshoot as you go through. So we've showed you today, why you would want to go on-prem from a development environment perspective with the app model and full trust code. We've explained how to get started with development in that on-premises environment and how to set up that server-to-server or high trust environment or the OAuth or ACS trust environment. What I will recommend is if you want to know more about the OAuth side of things, so how those tokens get thrown around SharePoint from the app model, there's a great session today by Eric Schupps, which is at 2:45, where he's going to go into real deep level around how to debug those OAuth tokens to see what's inside those OAuth tokens and why there's that content in those OAuth tokens and how they differ between S2S and the ACS approaches. So I'd highly recommend doing that if you're interested in that. Just a little bit of a wrap-up. From a dev.office.com perspective, as a developer in the room, this is the home that our team would like you to go to in Redmond. This is how we're going to communicate directly with you guys with news. There is also a really nice area on the blogs, so you can go and grab from blogs.office.com. There's lots of code samples, so a lot of the projects that you've seen today at TechEd, We've actually put those on GitHub, so there's some sessions this afternoon that we're demoing around the Office 365 APIs, which are actually available on GitHub for you guys to pull down. So please check out the Office Dev samples there. Steve Walker and Richard DeZariga did a great session on the first day talking about taking full trust code and migrating that to app model code. And it was all like the scenarios they're seeing in the field where maybe a customer had a SharePoint timer jobs, and obviously SharePoint timer jobs don't exist in the app model world, so what was the equivalent? A lot of that mapping. All of that is on the patterns and practices side on Office Dev P&P. If you have any questions, we have our content publishers, or I have my team in the marketing side, and we actually have our engineers watching Stack Overflow. So whether it's questions around SharePoint development or Office development in general, you can use the Ask SharePoint or Ask Office URLs. And also, we're after feedback. So if there's content that you're not happy with on MSDN, or maybe there's some APIs you think that need improving, or you'd like some extra things in the app model, please go to User Voice and submit those things. And if you haven't got ideas of your own just yet because you're not exploring it hard enough, we'd also like you to go in there and look at what other people's suggestions are and vote on the ones you think would be useful to you as well. We do weekly meetings against that User Voice where we go through and we look at what that feedback's coming through, and it actually impacts the roadmap. So we are listening, and so we highly recommend that you go on that side. And you know, this is really where we want your focus and how we want to engage with you in the community. So that was the Steve Walker and Richard DeZariga and Vesa. You've never been kind of working on these various different bits. So with that, thank you very much, Fabian, for spending your time getting those demos working early into the hours.
Thank you.
Whilst I was sleeping. And if you have any questions, we will be at the booth. I can see Lola at the back. If you're interested in a dev.office.com t-shirt, please go and see Lola at the back. We have some pretty cool t-shirts. You can be walking billboards for me for dev.office.com at the conference and user groups and in your office. Enjoy the rest of TechEd, and I hope to see you guys by the booth later on. Thank you very much for your time, guys.
Thank you very much.